Welcome to the Laws of Material Wealth Personal Development Program. I'm your host, James Renford Powell. And tonight we'll be bringing you the second in a series by Dr. L. McDonald. And this one will be on the dynamic body. She is the founder of Stress Ace Yoga. She and her partner, Anka, are the founders. I'll give you a little bit more detail, a little bit more introduction to her. In a moment. First of all, I want to remind you that if you'd like to check out other shows, go to Blog Talk Radio, BLOGTALK, blogtalkradio.com/Renford, and that will take you to the home page of Radio by Renford, and you can go back 5 years there in shows. It's a very interesting, the people that we've had on these shows. There are 11 shows a week now with hosts in New York, Boston, Seattle, Denver, Little Rock, Memphis, and the Netherlands, and different genres. So I want to invite you to check that out. If you've got anybody who would like to listen to the show and possibly they're not online or don't have a computer or whatever, feel free to call in on 347-838-9142. That's 347-838-9142. The one button on your touchtone dial, and that will flag our moderator, Rhonda Harrison, to bring you in for your question. It can be a question or a statement with regard to the guest or anything that I've said. You're perfectly welcome to do that. We'll talk some more about some other things that you can do to check us out, look into what we have to offer at the Institute of Applied Metaphysics. But first, I would like to get on with the reading of the 8th in my series of blogs called The Renford Revelations. This, I've had so many requests over the years, I mean, since we've had the program, so many requests for definitions, and it's so difficult to give a definition of a universal principle because they're so multifaceted, and you think you get a handle on it, and then you find it goes deeper and deeper and deeper. But I'll give you something to work with, something to start with. In one of the later shows, we'll go into a definition of the universal laws, because when I'm talking about the universal laws, it's the same as the 13 Universal Principles of Success. We've just utilized that term more frequently on this show because this show, after all, is the Laws of Material Wealth Personal Development Program. I'm going to read this, and then we'll get on with our guest, Dr. L. McDonald. I keep wanting to call her Dr. Ronald McDonald for some reason. I guess that's just seeing it all the time on everywhere you look. All right, the 13 Universal Principles of Success. What are the 13 universal principles of success? What are the benefits of identifying and verifying these principles? You do not have to accept what anyone says about these principles, because for them to be real for you, they have to be drawn from your own life experiences. You can say, I've been there and done that. Right? The benefits of such a process coming into harmony with the universal laws are life-changing. Here is what anyone can expect from the exercise. All right. One, the universal law of being. An individual that recognizes that there is more to him than just a body, a piece of complicated electromagnetic equipment that operates more or less mechanically, has made the first important step. He will break the chains of being mechanical by observing himself and those natural laws that captivate him. He will recognize that his being is a composite, and that he is a spirit with a body instead of just a physical being, or even a physical being with a spirit. He will recognize that he has certain innate qualities that he can expand and that are a result of the indwelling of God in man. The universal law of absolute unity is the second principle. In the way that I've categorized them, it's the second. There's not a priority here. He will come to know in body and soul and mind that he is part of being as a whole. He will know that he is a part of the divine matrix, and his real source of energy and power is oneness with universal being. Thirdly, the universal law of proper perspective. He will know where he is, and he will know where he is going. He will be more in one sense than most people ever become because he will know what he is doing. He will know exactly what he wants and what is important. He will have a sense of what his purpose in life is. His attitude will be such that there will be no room for negative or destructive thoughts. Universal law of pure potentiality. He will know that the manner in which he is in the image of universal being is that his divine birthright is that he is a creator, continuing process of creation. He will know that his thoughts are very powerful, each thought creating constructively or destructively. Every thought is part of the creation of his life. And next, the universal law of evolution and unfoldment. He will know that he is the author and creator of his life. He has not created the thought in a day and that it will not take form in a day. He will know it is a process of evolution and unfoldment, that he is in a perfect school, that he has entered as a process that will have numerous lessons for him. He will know that if he is persistent and holds the vision, what has been created in thought will take form. The universal law of balance and equalization. He will know that part of the composite of which he consists is the understanding he has brought with him, what he has accumulated in this life, and what he will gather to himself in the process. He will recognize that all of this is part of a perfect system of justice. Universal being does not and never has created anything imperfect. He will know that for him to realize fulfillment, he has to be in harmony with the perfect laws of universal being. Any non-alignment is a counterweight to his progress. The universal law of believing and knowing. He will know that what he creates in thought will take form, and that without thought there can be no form. What is created in thought only requires his belief that it will take form. If he does not believe that it will be, he has endowed his thought not only with an empty wish, but the failure becomes destructive, a destructive power telling him that the laws do not work. It is equivalent to saying universal being has no power. If he believes that what he has created in thought will be constructed or formed, he will know that it is only a matter of time. He does not worry the thought like a dog a bone. He believes in its creative power, and the thought takes form due to his actions and expectation. He begins with thought, and it grows with intent, buttressed with expectation. The universal law of attraction. He believes because he knows that he is a creator and that thought creates. His intent is powerful, and he allows it to take form. The attraction of others to his creation takes form because others are attracted to such an individual. Men and material are attracted like metal is attracted to a magnet. Those around him cannot help it. We are attracted to such individuals because whether or not we are as cognizant of the laws as he is, we want the same thing. The universal law of abundance. He will know that there is no limit on his creation but what he has placed on it by the limits he placed on himself and his vision. He knows that he can create shortages as easily as he creates abundance. He knows that when he experiences shortages and obstacles, he is the one who has done so. He will take full responsibility, blaming no one else, and will change his thinking. He will draw on the power of universal being and his full potentiality by expanding his thoughts and vision. He will not belabor the problem, but refocus on the solution and the vision he has created. The universal law of relativity. Now, in this series of 54 weeks, we saw what all these different spiritual leaders and philosophers said about each one of these laws. This is a definition for you to work with. The universal law of relativity. He will be aware that he is not an island, that others will be needed to fulfill his vision. He will know that he is connected to those that will have to be drawn into his vision to those who share the vision and to those he will serve. He will become fully aware of the effect he has on all and with whom he comes. Effect he has on all with whom he comes in contact. The universal law of righteous self-interest. He will know that he cannot cast his pearls before swine. In other words, his vision is held up always for him to keep in focus. He will know that he cannot be selfish, but that this is his primary purpose. This cannot be realized without giving, but he will know that he cannot allow others' negative thoughts to diminish that vision or deter him from its fulfillment. His purpose is to learn and to benefit those he comes in contact with. It is not a selfish endeavor because it is an expression of his love of life and being as a whole. The universal law of giving. And some would call this the law of giving and receiving. He will know that he will have no chance of seeing his vision manifested unless he is serving others, that this life is about giving of himself, his vision, his time, his knowledge, and his money. He knows that the measure of his receiving is in the measure of his giving. What he puts into his creation is the determining factor in what he will get out of it. Right? And finally, the universal law of love. He is fully aware that the love he shows to all being is his expression of his love for life, self, and universal being. He will know this because he will know that he is a part of the absolute unity of all. He will know that whether the bulk of his giving is in the form of knowledge, time, or money, that no matter what he gives constructively, he is giving love. Love is what he has received from universal being, and it is all that he can constructively give. All is an expression of love for universal being. In summary, if you think you have learned anything in the school of life so far, I suggest that it will pale by comparison to identifying and verifying the universal principles of success in your life experiences. Make it, number one, the highest priority to study the 13 universal principles of success in relation to your life and identify those experiences that can confirm the existence of each law. When you can begin the work on self from a position of knowing, then you can begin this work on self from a position of knowing. If you cannot identify them, continue your study from a different perspective. I've written a number of books from different perspectives specifically for this reason. And two, identify those things that you love doing, which are constructive and beneficial to others. You will thereby identify how you are most capable of giving. Where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. And number three, no matter what else you do, begin by recognizing that your thoughts are powerful expressions of your inner being, that you cannot afford a negative thought, and that what you think, you become. And that's my Renford Revelations for tonight, February the 18th. And let's get to our guest. My guest is Dr. L. McDonald. She teaches at the University of Memphis. She teaches in her own private classes. She is a world traveler with a wide range of knowledge and healing from modern Western medical training to the Sangoma of Africa. She's been there and done that. And she is now doing a seven-part series. Let's see. It is a six-part series, and tonight is the second week, The Dynamic Body. Welcome to the show, Dr. McDonald.
Thank you, Jim.
Did I cover you well, or do I need to give you some more?
No, that's fine. That's fine. Tonight's talk is part two, called The Dynamic Body Self. The self word is really important. And it's part of a six-part series called Perspectives on Transcendence. And tonight, I just want to recap a little bit about last week, which will help piece this series together. We talked about multiplicity and diversity within oneness. And within that oneness I use the metaphor of an orchestra making music, and that each individual in the orchestra is playing his own instrument. And when the music gets started, before the music gets started, they're all out of tune, and the conductor's trying to get their attention, and they're tuning their instruments and everything. And then once they start following the conductor or following the flow, then they become in harmony and they start creating this beautiful music together. So tonight, we're going to discuss the instrument, the dynamic body self. And I just want to talk briefly about the developmental stages of cognitive and emotional development. We're going to use the model of the Swiss psychologist Piaget, and his is not a complete model, but he's done enough that we can use it for this evening. The first stage of development is being conceived, and when we're conceived, the sperm and egg come together, and the little cells start developing, and they attached to the side of the uterus, and then after about 3 weeks, they break off from the side of the uterus, and they float in this oceanic feeling of bliss. So the first stage of development is in the womb, and in the womb, there's constant movement. There's constant growing, stretching. The fetuses have been observed to even go through evolutionary stages, like a reptile or with hands and a tail. And then once they get going, they go into like different postures while they're in the womb. They'll start doing yoga postures. They'll pull their legs up and they'll stretch back and they'll arch their back. So they're constantly moving. Constantly going and changing positions until they get big enough when it's time for them to be born. And then they're still moving. There's still a lot of movement, the blood coursing through their veins. They're attached to the umbilical cord, the mother's voice. Everything is in constant motion. Then when they're born, they come out of this oceanic feeling into life. Now, here's where a lot of people, most people, happen to separate. They separate from that oceanic feeling. Now, if you take a little infant that's just been born, he's born and he starts exploring life. His vision is not real great. His hearing, they are very sensitive to hearing, but he starts developing what we call a sensory motor perception. And while he's in this sensory motor perception, he still feels like he's in this oceanic feeling of life. And the infant doesn't feel separated from the mother because in the womb, when the mother breathed, it breathed. When the mother ate, when the mother felt something, it felt something. So there's this whole sensory motor development that starts happening for the infant. Starts exploring, picking up things, crawling, all those kinds of things. So we're born into this oceanic feeling of development, sensory motor. And when we get to be about 2 years old, the child starts saying no, and then the separating starts. And that's where the child starts becoming an individual. Now, the next stage of development is formal operations, the way Piaget developed it. And in formal operations, the child learns he starts going to school, and he learns arithmetic. He learns to think. There's different things that happen in formal operations. And when we go from the oceanic feeling to the sensory motor and then to formal operations, that's where the conditioning and training of culture and society kicks in. It's no one's fault. It's just the way that it's been done. So what I'm suggesting in the stages of development, there's another stage after formal operations. In Piaget's model, formal operations up until you get to be about age 25 is all there is, then you're an adult. So typically in our, the way we look at life of a human being, formal operations and adulthood is the last stage of development. But what I'm purporting or proposing is that there's another stage that's starting to open up for people. And this developmental stage is one that may have been around in the past or it may not have been around in the past. But it's where intelligence begins, and this is after adulthood. It's the next level of development. Intelligence becomes holistic and advanced. And it's cognitive physical development in the prefrontal cortex, the front of the brain, but it's a different intelligence than the cognitive intelligence. It's an intelligence of flashes of insight. And what I'm suggesting is that the next stage of development for human beings, they can learn to live in this stage full time. And by being in this stage full time, you don't see things linearly. You get into the multiplicity and diversity within oneness, and there's a flow that starts happening, the same flow when the child separated from the mother around age 2 and started being trained by culture. I feel there is a way that we can separate and become, not separate, but become an individual, but still be a part of the oneness. And maybe the children that are being born now won't have as much conditioning of society and culture as we did. Perhaps there's a different way of seeing things if more people would learn how to do this idea of staying within the oneness while you're individuating. So I feel that there's a possibility that we can learn how to individuate and still stay part of this oneness. And our dynamic body self, when we realize that our body is constantly moving, we are not separate from the oneness. Even from the moment of conception, there's constant movement in the womb. We get outside the womb, we move. In order to move, we have to develop our brain. We have to move. There are some societies that when their children are born, they'll put them in a sling. I think it's Bali that does this. And the children are not allowed to crawl or to move around on their own for a whole year. And in doing that, a lot of their brain development doesn't happen. So it's really important that movement keep happening. So we're looking at dynamic body self, a way to be in constant movement with ourselves, not feel like a statue and like our bodies are constantly still and concrete.
Let me ask you a question.
Okay.
That is fascinating that what you're saying is that people are doing yoga before they're conceived. They're doing yoga movements.
No, not before they're conceived, while they're in the womb.
That's okay, yeah. Before they're born.
Before they're born, yes.
Yeah. My miswording. And so have you been able to identify how many different yoga type movements that a fetus does?
Well, I know it's been recorded, but I do not know. But I know they're in constant motion and movement. There's been some fascinating studies with fetuses and studying that. I'm sure it's recorded somewhere, but I do not know how many. There's over 1,200 yoga postures, so I would have no way to know that.
But it's a natural thing. Just whatever they
thing.
Do in movement wise, they're naturally doing it. So when you're
right.
teaching yoga, you're teaching something that's actually innate to the human being, to the human body.
That's right. If you watch children, you'll see small children doing yoga too. They don't know they're doing yoga, but if you watch their body postures and movements, and even in the crib, you can see little babies when they're trying to learn to crawl and walk. They'll lift their torso up, and they'll arch their back, and they'll turn their head. Yes,
mm-hmm.
yoga is an innate thing for people. But what happens, this is what happens, we contract and we separate. And when we contract and separate, our body stiffens up. And so what I'm proposing is that there we don't have to do that. We get culturally ingrained and trained that in a way that creates contraction. And when you're in contraction, either physically, mentally, emotionally, or spiritually, you're suffering. There's a suffering that goes on. So we're all kind of trained into this static self. We're trained by culture and society. And we're born into and conceived into bliss and oneness, one of flowing and movement. So how do we get trained when we're born into this wonderful bliss and oneness? Because we come from bliss and oneness. We come from this oceanic feeling, and that's our basic nature of the dynamic body self, the basic nature of this oceanic, natural, innate movement. And we all get stuck in this static self.
What's the culprit there? Why do we get that? Where does the static self come from?
We are trained by culture and society. We are trained, and it's nobody's fault. It's not about blaming anybody. We're trained anytime we get in a developmental stage. The way we get to the next stage is somebody teaches us. Somebody models for us. We are entrained to the... If you're a little infant and you want to learn how to walk, somebody teaches you how to walk.
Mm-hmm.
If you, when you're an infant, you don't think like an adult. If you're an adult, you don't think like a preschooler. So every time someone goes through one of these developmental stages, the next stage of development has to be taught or entrained. You don't just move through them on your own. Your parents are there, your teachers are there, society is there, your peers are there. They're all entraining you. And so we get contracted. And as we grow up from birth through the stages of development, we become more and more an individual. So I think and feel this next stage of development that we can all move into is a way that we can all learn from people that are already there. Now, there's not too many around, but let's take Einstein was one. Einstein was one of these guys that had flashes of insight. He wasn't too good at linear stuff because I think he failed math, but he was a genius. So that what I'm talking about is the ability to be a genius and live by, I think it says in the Bible, where the birds of the air and the lilies of the field are taken care of. We learn to live innately by our own innate self, but we've gotten so far out of our innate self, we have to learn how to get back to it again.
Is there, and you, in your thinking, the only way that that's really possible is through yoga, going back to those body movements that you had pre-birth?
Well, it's not the only way, but it is a way. In the Western society, we're trained to be mental. We're trained to live in our head rather than experience our bodies. So our body is actually a key to this next stage of development. And in this stage of development, there's, I think you know that we've been told for years that, you know, once we get our brain cells, they start deteriorating, and that's why we get senility and Alzheimer's and those kind of things, dementia. Now,
I thought it was from eating too much Chinese food and taking that MSG or whatever in it.
That's true, too. But now they've made new discoveries, and they found out our brain has neuroplasticity, which means that if we go back to our early stages of development and use some of these body postures and things, we can actually grow our brains. And when we grow our brains, different parts of the body will also come alive. So we have, in our Western society, we've learned how to be mental rather than experience our bodies. Our mental ego takes over. And this ego teaches us how to be static because we've learned it from other people. And this is how suffering starts to happen.
Do you know if there's any work going on with Alzheimer's patients? Are there any studies being done to see about stimulating the brain cells again with them? Or is it too late?
I don't think I know that. That's not an area that I investigate too much. No. But I do know that there's a lot of research going on around Alzheimer's. I'm not real clear if they even know why people get Alzheimer's altogether at this point. But
mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think they know.
Yeah. So, so anyway, our mental ego separates us from our body experience. And more specifically, it separates us from our oceanic oneness that we were born into. And so as we become individual, we are trained to focus on the outer world rather than our inner world, and we suffer from that. And I feel that we can learn to grow into our individually without the separation and create this contraction. And if we've already been entrained, the yoga, the stress-ace yoga especially, helps relearn and retrain the body and mind to be able to touch that oceanic feeling again. And I feel that it actually helps our neuroplasticity. And once we have released stress from our nervous system and our body, then the body starts feeling its early stages of development like a child again, and then we can get back to our original innocence. So the separation from the body of life when we're born into it and the unity of all of life, the body of life or oneness, is our body, and we are part of that. So when we talk about oneness and the multiplicity within the oneness and the diversity, that's what I'm talking about. And so there's this constant movement within the oneness, and our body is part of that movement. Not only are we part of that movement, we are the movement itself. So we have the oneness in us, and the oneness is outside of us, and it's in constant motion. So when the self becomes mental and separates from that, the contraction we experience is like we become 2 millimeters, and there's a 200 meter or 2,000 meter playing field, and we're playing in a 2 millimeter field. Because of that contraction, we could we could know all the time that we're connected to the oneness in the body of life and that we're born into this unboundedness, but we get contract so much that we have this little band of awareness that we live in rather than this huge, vast expanse that we could live in and be connected to the flow of that.
The programs that you teach, I mean, obviously, to have something for absolute and total beginners, as well as for people who've been doing some type of yoga, right?
The yoga that we teach, we always start, excuse me, everyone where they are. So if you're an advanced yogi, we start there. If you have never even seen a yoga mat, we start you there. The yoga that we teach, we start with unwinding the stress from the nervous system. Once you begin unwinding the stress and the contraction from the nervous system, you become more flexible. You start opening up to this oneness that I'm talking about. You develop your neuroplasticity in your brain. You start getting flashes of insight. Your intuition becomes very sharp. So it's all about being able to get the nervous system where it was when we came into the world and back to our original innocence, so to speak. And to know that we can have our individuality and we can still be part of the one. We do not have to be individual and separate because the one is all around us and we are the one inside of us as well.
It seems to me that this is an absolute critical thing that regardless of whether one's going out and get exercise or not, or eating right, or whatever you're doing, it seems to me this would have to be considered high priority, very critical to ongoing health.
Well, I don't consider this exercise. A lot of people call yoga exercise, and I have to kind of educate them. We don't call our yoga teachers teachers. We call them educators. We have to educate people on the value of letting the body have its own intelligence and its own wisdom. In fact, one of the things that I say in the classes is we use this to get into the body, not the body to get into the posture. Let me say that again. We use this posture to get into the body, not the body to get into the posture. So what that does is that because most people are so contracted, they teach us in this society, no pain, no gain. You've got to get out. You've got to go. You've got to do. But what we educate people to do is to feel where they're contracted and to allow their bodies to start unwinding. A lot of this has to do with, you know, Freud studied, or his big thing was the superego, the ego, and the id. And his model was quite, I'm not going to go into Freud and all that, but, you know, the superego was the intellect. The ego was the individual self, and the id was the body. Now, Freud had a lot of fear around the id. He felt that it was sexual and didn't know very much. It was kind of stupid, that sort of thing. But what I'm talking about is the superego is our intellect, but there is a higher intellect that can mature our individual self. And we go into this higher intellect. This higher intellect includes the body. So the whole system matures into this next level of functioning, which I call formless operation, because it doesn't require linear thought. You flow with the oneness, like Einstein and his genius and his flashes of insight that he got. There are other people on the planet that are also like that, that can get into formless operation. They may not be there 24/7, but they're at least aware of it and know when it's functioning. So to be a fulfilled individual, we can do that by, we create it out of nothing, because the brain development that we have already is already there. It's just never been activated. So once you release the stress from the body, this higher brain function can kick in, because we've been using most of our energy to survive. And that's in the back brain, not the front brain. And once we do this, we know who is the creator, who is the self, and who you are, who the I is that we talk about. We talk about when we're talking about I all the time. You actually get a sense of that.
The super ego, and one that's above that, you said is called what?
The id is the body, the ego is the individual self, and then the super ego is the intellect. But there is a higher intellect above that. It's just called, I call it just higher intellect. And
okay,
that's where the upper brain function has kicked in. And everybody has this capability of doing this. But it's interesting that you have to learn it from someone else. It's not something, there's no, in other words, you have to allow your body to guide you to this place through someone that's already there. It's a little bit like catching.
It sounds like the Eastern Eastern yogas who are teaching teach the same thing, that you must have a master, you must have a guide.
No, it's not about mysticism. It's not any of that. It's about having someone.
No, I'm saying I was just saying it's comparable to that. They also teach that there must be a teacher, a master. One doesn't learn it on his own.
Well, here's the thing, Jim. It's once the unwinding starts in the body, you become your own guide. But you have to be shown how to unwind your body. So you become your own guru and your own master and your own teacher, but you have to be shown how to start that process happening, and you have to become sensitive enough to your own dynamic body self in order to recognize when that's happening.
From your own experience, how long does that take, usually?
Well, if a person you know, catches it, so to speak, around 18 months is a good time frame to where they would be to a place where they could continue on their own.
Could start to unwind.
No, they start unwinding right away. But
okay,
to get through some of the, you know, whatever's gone into our nervous system has to come out of our nervous system. And you'll see that in trauma, when people have been under trauma, if they've, let's take a soldier, for instance, who's been in war, he'll come back home, but he'll bring that trauma with him, so he might hear a car go off, backfire or something, and he'll think it's a gun for a moment. So whatever's gone in has got to come out So having worked with veterans and people that have been in trauma, rape, you know, sexual abuse, all kinds of physical issues, there's a small window where that has to come out. It doesn't last very long, but you sort of need a guide or someone there when that starts happening. So when people come to Stress Ice Yoga, most of them are not traumatized or that sort of thing, but they may be, you know. But if it does start happening, there's a guide there or someone to just get you through that little bit. It doesn't last very long. But whatever is in the nervous system has got to come out of the nervous system. And it could be very quick, or sometimes they don't feel anything at all. But it takes about 18 months to get an adult back to the place where...
And some of this stuff, I suppose, could be buried very deeply and very hard to get at. Almost like...
We're not...
No,
it's not about getting at it. What happens is it's layered in there. So initially we work on current stress. Then the longer a person does it, the next layer of stress comes up. The longer a person does it, the next layer of stress comes up. So it's not about getting at anything or even having an issue. You could just come and want to, you know, relax. But what happens is the body will start unwinding, and even though something's not consciously bothering you, you might have an old foot injury or something that would come up and be there for a couple of hours or something, but it doesn't hang around because it's gone away, gone out of the body.
Typically, how long does how long do your sessions last?
The classes are an hour. If you do a private, it depends on the person, but I can do a private too. It's about an hour, hour and a half. It just depends. But
maybe now is a good time for you to tell everyone how they can reach you.
Okay. My phone number is 901. I'm sorry?
No,
hello?
That's okay. Go ahead. 901.
My phone number is 901-457-8895. My email is Ella, E-L-L-A, at stressace.com. I have a Facebook page. My personal Facebook page is Ella, E-L-L-A, M-A-C-D-O-N-A-L-D. And my Stress Ace Facebook page is Stress Ace Yoga for Natural Stress Control.
We plan on having Dr. McDonald once a month at the Unity Christian Church, providing this on Sunday afternoons at 4:30, but she teaches at the University of Memphis. And are there other classes that you have that you could tell people about? Are they regularly scheduled?
Yes, I have a class on Friday evenings at 6 out in East Memphis. I have a Saturday morning class at 11:30 out in East Memphis as well. And you can always call and schedule private sessions too.
Now, you're spending a lot of time training instructors, aren't you?
I'm definitely doing that. We're having a big teachers gathering March the 22nd for people that are interested in becoming educators. And we like for
now
people to be already...
That'd normally be somebody who's already teaching yoga or certainly advanced yoga, right?
Well, we like to train people specifically that are already certified yoga teachers. But if someone has a real interest in Stress Ace Yoga and wants to learn it, Stress Ace as a coaching tool or to help with their, like if they're a psychologist, they can come in and it will definitely help their client base, especially the ones that are working under duress or have trauma. So we do train some psychologists to use stress ACE, not specifically stress ACE yoga, and we do train some coaches. Stress ACE can also be used for athletic performance like golf and equestrian riding. We even know my associate Anka Ramsden in Australia works with equestrians, and she'll work with the riders, the dressage high jumpers, and the horses perform better when their riders are relaxed. So they found that working with animals, if you work with the owners of the animals, the animals respond accordingly.
Well, modern medicine seems now to have acknowledged, pure out front acknowledged, that stress leads to bad health, heart attacks, and all kinds of things, right? So,
right.
So your program, you start with working with people who have a lot of stress, right? And where they go from there is really kind of dependent upon them, but that's what you're working with right now, is people who have
right.
a great deal of stress in their lives.
Well, some people come and they don't think they have stress in their lives. They just want to do yoga. But then once they start doing the yoga, they see how much better they feel. You know, taking this whole conversation back to the health and wealth thing, a lot of people want more money, or they want more friends, or they want, you know, they want a better quality of life, prosperity. And a lot of that, that's keeping this out of their life, is the stress in their body and the stress in their mind, because if they're not in the flow of life, if they're contracted, they're going to keep, they won't be able to join in with the flow of life to allow the abundance of prosperity and money and friends and family and all that to flow through them. And so they'll develop conflicts, or inner conflicts with themselves about deserving and this and that and this and that. So this flow that I'm talking about, especially with the dynamic body self, affects every aspect of a person's life. Because we're so trained in the West to be mental, we think we can think our way through things, and it doesn't always work. The flashes of insight, the intuition, the way your body feels affects everything around you and every person around you. The vibrations that you give off affect everything. If your animal or your dog can pick up that you're in a bad mood, you don't have to tell them you're in a bad mood. The dog knows, right?
I can almost, I know it's not the same, but I hear the same thing people talk about with the need for meditation because of stress, and to lower the metabolic rate and all of that. The exercises and the positions that you teach your students to do is, we're dealing with the body. Do you equate that at all?
Meditation, we do meditation with yoga, with this yoga. However, this is a dynamic, active quiet, where meditation typically is a bit of a, not a dumbing down, but a needing to be still and let the mind be quiet and all that. And what we do is this all happens naturally. Once you get the stress out, once you allow your body wisdom to take over, your mind is going to be naturally still. You don't have to force it or say a mantra or do any of that stuff, because that's kind of like a dumbing down of a person to do that. But once you are clear and your nervous system is unwound, you're back in your natural state of that oceanic bliss that we're born into, that I talked about in the beginning, that we separate from and get contracted. Now, I'm not saying meditation is not good, because meditation is good. If you're going to do anything, I mean, you're not doing anything else, meditation is great. But what we're teaching and showing people, that if you will allow your own body wisdom to take over, where you're not living in your head all the time and not having a million thoughts a day, that's when the magic starts happening. That's when the flow of life starts happening. That's when the manifestation and the creating starts happening. And then you start to realize that you're the creator, and that the I that you talk about is also the I outside of you. And there's this flow that begins that is, again, back to the movements of the dynamic body self that you were in the womb. You were a little baby in the womb, but now you get that oceanic idea and you're an adult. So as an adult, there's lots more choices than you had as a child, as a little infant. You just had that and you had no sense about it. But as an adult, you have this oceanic feeling and you see that life is a flow, and when you're in this flow and you're not trying to hold on and you're not contracting, things start happening. People are drawn to you. You're manifesting. You're creating wealth and abundance naturally. It just comes. Like the birds of the air and the lilies of the field. You're taking care of them.
They toil not, neither do they spin. We're down to about the 2-minute mark, and I wanted you to tell the listeners a little bit about your books and how they might get your books too.
Okay, have an ebook. You can contact me, and you can get the ebook that way. We should have a book called The Yoga of Natural Stress Control out by September, hopefully. And then I've also got a YouTube video. You just type in on YouTube Stress Ace and click on the one that says L, 15 minutes. It's called the Body Clock Harmonizer. So, yeah, you can do those things.
Okay, well, I want to thank you for being with us. Do you feel like you've covered most of, we've only got about 60 seconds. Do you feel like you've covered dynamic body, what you wanted to in this session?
I think so. We got a little off target there for a little bit, but I think I got the idea about the body being flowing and not being static and all that. That was the main thing.
So next week, I think you're on the 3rd of each month, we're going to be talking about creating and manifesting, right?
That's right. Which all relates back to the dynamic body self and multiplicity within diversity. Okay.
Fantastic. Thank you very much all for being with us. Very, very interesting, and looking forward to your next appearance on the show. And thanks, everybody, for being with us tonight on the Laws of Material Wealth Personal Development Program. Have a good one.